This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
So the COVID-19 has wreaked havoc in many other countries everywhere in the world. And, you know, economies have collapsed, businesses have collapsed and all of that. But one of the saddest part is the fact that it has also perpetuated dropouts of young kids, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa. And it gets worse in other parts of Africa, we are told, because girls are also dropping out in big numbers. Some of them fall pregnant, and as a result, they fall. Some of them find work or are forced to find work. Because the parents would have lost their jobs. And apparently it's becoming a major issue. Even here in South Africa, it's a major, major issue. And there is a campaign which is called the Zero Dropout School Campaign. And there is a report as well that speaks to building resilience in our school system before and after COVID-19. Mel Mansfield is the program manager for the Zero Dropout Campaign. And Mel, good morning to you. Welcome to Power Talk.
Good morning, Tabiso, and good morning to your listeners. Thank you for having us.
How big is this problem, though? Just give us a sense of where we are as a country with regards to dropout, particularly as a result of this COVID-19.
So we are in a very precarious situation currently, mostly because we had a very big dropout problem before COVID-19. Mm. About 40% of our learners who start school don't, you know, make it to matric. And so they drop out of school before they get to that grade 12 year. And that's before the pandemic hit us. And from what we're understanding about dropout, we realize that, in fact, it's really influenced by a range of factors that increase a learner's disengagement in school over a period of time. And so all of our learners who've been in the school system and struggling to hold their grip on schooling have now been further impacted by the impacts of COVID-19. You know, in their homes, the losses of jobs, food insecurity, many learners dealing with loss and grief of family members and having to navigate all of that. And then, of course, missing school for as many days as they did last year.
So what are we talking about? I mean, who's mostly dropping out? Is it the same problem that is being experienced in sub-Saharan Africa, where young girls, particularly teenagers, you know, who are also dropping out because of this whole, or exacerbated, I suppose, by this whole COVID-19 situation?
So we're seeing in South Africa that our largest proportion of dropout occurs in our high schools, particularly in grade 10. We're also seeing that a large percentage of our boys repeat school across all provinces, across all types of schools. So in terms of quantiles, we define our schools by poorest to richest schools. And all of those schools across the board, boys are repeating at a higher rate than girls. Mm. And repetition, repeating a grade or failing a grade, is a high-risk indicator for dropout, because what that means is that you actually overage for your grade. Mm. So once you're repeating more than once, you're going to be the oldest child within your classroom, which has implications for young people around their self-esteem, their motivation to return to school, you know, their commitment and their peer support. And that really impacts their feeling around coming back to school and staying committed. So for us, boys are at a higher risk currently. But what we do know, after the impact of the pandemic, we've seen in sub-Saharan Africa, like you've been saying, that the burden of care still rests very, very severely on the shoulders of girls. Mm. And we know that many homes have needed girls to take on extra responsibilities in terms of taking care of homes while adults are trying to facilitate, you know, other means of income and finding ways to survive. And so we're needing to see and we're needing to be cautious about what the impact of that will be for girls returning to school this year.
So this campaign, how does it mitigate against this perilous problem?
So what we've been doing, Tapiso, is really to start off by shaking up this conversation about dropout, because it's never been had in our country. In fact, last year was the first time We heard the Department of Basic Education speaking about dropout very explicitly. Mm. And COVID-19 has really made it possible for everybody to see the impact of dropout more clearly. And so as a starting point for everybody to start understanding that dropout isn't about having lazy, naughty young people in our schools. Mm. It is, in fact, a phenomenon that occurs because of a lack of support to hold young people in schools. So we don't have enough psychosocial support in schools. Many young people are dealing with a number of difficulties in their lives without any support or kind of facilitating them to stay in school. And we talk about that extensively in the surveys we've done in our report that's been released this week. We also don't have the data in our country to track dropout. And so what we've developed is an early warning system, which is a tool that allows you to track the risk of a learner over time to make sure that you intervene before they drop out of school. And we've been advocating for the use of this system throughout our school system and to be integrated at a national level so that we can all start seeing what the real dropout numbers are and also that we can start preventing dropouts from happening.
Yeah. What mechanism, though, would you use to prevent it from happening in the first place?
So we work with actually a range of implementing partners who are NGOs in the three provinces in South Africa, Western Cape, Eastern Cape, and KwaZulu-Natal, and they've been testing actually what works. What we see to work is that once we are working with learners in the school space, doing psychosocial support very intently, we are able to help learners to stay connected to school and to come back to school. During the pandemic period, all of our organizations started developing mechanisms to stay in touch with our learners, for example, especially the ones who already were having strenuous relationships with schools. Mm. So creating WhatsApp groups, phoning them every day to check in that they are fine, that they are completing whatever tasks they were given, working with parents to help them facilitate how to have the conversations about the anxiety, about the struggle in the home, so that learners feel that they do have a safe space and that they have a support. Also ensuring that the actual materials get into the home. We know many of our kids don't have devices, they don't have internet. So we worked with schools to help deliver this kind of information into packs, into learners' homes, creating, homework corners in communities where learners could come and have a safe, quiet place where they could do work socially distanced during the pandemic period. So lots of kind of innovative ideas that have come up working with schools and communities to help facilitate the time when learners didn't have access to school.
Hmm. But I'm sure you are literally talking here about those that, you know, would have taken the decision not 100% sure. What about those that drop out and drop out with the support of their parents or the endorsement of their parent in particular? Because, you know, the households with both parents, I suppose it's a different matter. It's not that easy, but, you know, there are those that either live with a parent or no parents at all. Plus, these are pre-adults. I mean, these are young people in high school, you know, 18, 19, 20, and so on. So what about those that would have taken a decision to say, not anymore?
You know, we found from our work, and you'll see in our report, we actually talked to some of those young people who've had to make that very difficult decision, that none of them actually want to leave school, that it's not something where they decide. All of these young people are very committed, and they understand that completing school is an important element of their lives. But that they needed to survive today. They need access to something today. And we find that in the spaces where we're able to provide some kind of access and are able to insulate them from the impact of not having access to a particular need or resource, that decision comes, very differently. The decision is made very differently. For young people who do choose to leave the system, our policy in the country does allow you to exit the schooling system if you're at the age of 15 or you complete grade 9. So legislatively, you're not obliged to continue school following that year. The difficulty is that we don't have enough options for young people in the country who decide to take that decision. You know, it's very rare that the young person is able to access a post-school opportunity, a learnership or an educational program without their matric certificate. And so the young people who do leave, they leave to enter the informal job market. And we do know from the stats that we're seeing that, in fact, the larger proportion of our unemployed population, more than half, don't have a matric certificate. And so the access to that job opportunity is also very rare. So in our conversations with parents and communities, we do try to alert people to the fact that this decision has a greater impact and that there might be this key opportunity at this moment, you know, to fill or plug the hole in terms of the need to survive, but that there is long-term implications for how sustainable that will be for the livelihoods of young people. We are seeing that in our country we have about 3.4 million young people between the ages of 15 and 23 who are not in employment, education or training. We call them NEET. And again, the greater proportion of them don't have a matric certificate.
3.9 million, you said?
3.4 million,
3.4
yes.
Million.
Yes. So we can see that, you know, the access or having something that shows you've completed school gives you a better opportunity to access some kind of program, process, job opportunity after school. And you're more likely to access that with the certificate than without.
So naturally, you are saying 40% of the kids don't make it to grade 12, right?
Yes.
So what are your estimations with regards to this COVID-19 situation, which has actually made it worse?
So it's very difficult to estimate because of the fact that we don't have the data resources within our country. But if I look at the global perspective and particularly looking at some of the projections made after crisis like the Ebola crisis in West Africa, for example, you know, schools did feel the impact of dropout with more than 50% of their populations not returning, and that countries had to make a very concerted effort intentionally to actually engage learners to come back to school. So real campaigns about getting school, getting learners back into school, and then after that, getting them back on track. So there's still a lot of work that needs to be done after the learners miss such an extensive part of school to catch them up and get them back to the right educational level. So for us in our country, if we look at one of the risk factors of dropout being repetition, more than 60% of our kids in our school population in the quantile 1 to 3 schools are not at the right age for their grade. So that is our high risk population. And so if we don't engage those learners and we don't have the right processes put in place for those particularly difficult schools where they have no resources, we are going to see a much higher number of learners leaving the school system next year.
So tell me this. I mean, what options are there for a 20-year-old, 21-year-old who still wants to complete the matric, who may have decided to drop out for a year or two, but now wants to go back and study, and then they're told that they're too old? I mean, I know in my time there was something called night school or old school, which was for people who are much, much older. To what extent are these 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds able to be accommodated without really feeling guilty that they are going into the pension aspect of high school?
So we do have the second chance program within our country. And in fact, we have a large number of learners that register for the second chance program every year, more than 100,000 learners, in fact. And you're able to redo your matric through that program. And that is the National Senior Certificate Program. Then we also have the Senior Certificate Program, which older learners or adults can access through their local district education offices. And in that way, you can also then complete a certificate of schooling by completing a number of subjects over a period of time at your own pace. So there are options for people to access. The difficulty is that a lot of this information isn't very public, so it's not very known. And second to that, it requires the young person to initiate the contact and then to navigate a very complicated, often system of how to get this information and details set up. And so we do encourage young people or young adults who are interested in doing that to visit our website. We do have a lovely brief around the Second Chance program and what you need to do if they're interested in following that route.
All right, let me go to Mamelodi Tabo. Good morning.
Morning, Kotane. How are you?
Fine, man. How are you?
I'm good. No, Kotane, I was having this discussion yesterday with my daughter. You know, she was telling me how the most of the students are dropping out. And then here is the reason, Kota, that she told me. She said that, Papa, it's useless for other kids because of this social media stuff. You know, they see a lot of things there where you see uneducated people are making it. And then you look at people who are doing tenders, who are mimicking your nest. And then we have people who are occupying very high positions, you know, with no educational background. Mm. And then we have academics, you know, graduate who are just sitting at home. So these kids, when they see this kind of things, you know, go down, it makes them wonder to say, education is no more important because of people that are making money are not even educated. Because of she told me an example by Richard Branson, but I can tell you that honey, Richard Branson might have a grade 4, but the people that are running his company are very educated people.
Yeah, that's the reality there, Mel, isn't it?
Absolutely, and I mean we often hear young people having this conversation about, you know, being entrepreneurs or particularly being social media influencers, because these are kind of new streams of work that are evolving in this period of time. And so I understand the appeal for young people to have that immediate kind of gratification in terms of money and success, because they see that on social media platforms or they see that across, you know, the media they engage in. But when we look at the stats and we look at the statistics of South Africa, and particularly to our context, we can see that that's not the truth. So the lives and the people who have been able to do that, we can see that those are they're outliers, and that the norm, in fact, is that many people stay in poverty, stay unable to access opportunities without the schooling and without a good educational foundation. One of the things that I'm very proud of that DBE has started talking about now is the institutionalizing of additional skill subjects for our young people. And I think that this is a very important move, because some of our young people really do have the ability to do wonderful artisan work, for example, or beauty or hospitality, but they're not able to access those kind of programs until they finish school. And if we can start institutionalizing those subjects, we're already giving people an opportunity to see how they could earn money outside of just having to go to a university or, you know, a post-school institution to be able to do that. And so that's one of the most important moves we're making. But definitely to encourage young people to understand the complexity of being able to navigate the labor market in the 21st century with the requirements of what the skills are we going to need to do well.
Here's something I've observed about the education sector. You all speak past each other in most cases. Even with a simple issue of whether children must go to school or not, the department will say, let's go. The union will say this. And other NGOs will be taking the education department to court. And, you know, it just goes around and around. Now, here you are. You've got a program. You've got a beautiful campaign, Zero Dropout campaign. To what extent are you in tandem with the Department of Education and supporting one another, together with other stakeholders as well, to say, guys, let's focus on this beautiful campaign, which is very important, the Zero Dropout campaign? Or is your report going to gather dust like many others?
No, Tabi. So I think that that's something that we value very much. Working with the Department of Basic Education is a very important part of our work. And in fact, last year, we managed to secure a briefing opportunity with the Parliamentary Committee on Basic Education. And from there, have now worked on formalizing a partnership with the Department of Basic Education, particularly around how to do the data tracking. I think that that's a very important piece that you're bringing up, because the education system is extremely complex. And having to find ways in which we are all building together means that we have to talk to each other and means that we have to engage each other, as challenging as that might be. And so the past year, we've done that work to really make the engagement with provincial departments, with national departments, and forge strong partnerships to ensure that the work we're doing, the research we're doing, doesn't gather dust, but does get to implement the processes and planning that happens at the national level. So we've been grateful for the opportunity given to us by the department, and we are also really encouraged by them discussing dropout and talking about dropout and trying to actually project numbers for the first time last year. And we're hoping to take that forward.
I know you spoke about this, but give us the steps that you are going to start with in the short term and in the long term, and how implementable is this, or you are not at that stage at the moment?
So you're talking about what the program will implement?
Yeah, that this zero dropout campaign. I mean, how are you going to implement it, and how far are you with the implementation?
So we've been implementing over the past 3 years with our implementing partners, because we wanted to start testing the stuff that we developed so that we could demonstrate to people that it works. And so for the past 3 years, we started off working in 30 schools in the three provinces. And we've now also started a network of schools where we are expanding this work and asking schools to adopt it in their spaces. So not waiting for the Department of Education to give the go-ahead in terms of this is something that everybody should do, but already starting to work on the ground using the data tracking tools, using the psychosocial support techniques, and training teachers and organizations on how to do it so that we demonstrate that it works. And while doing that, we get more people involved in doing it. So we've had quite a bit of success over the past 3 years, really changing things like chronic absenteeism in the school spaces we're working in, seeing reduced dropout in some of the schools that we have participated in, but also really starting to see numbers of or tracking numbers across the schools that we work in. And that's really the reason why the department has been so open to engaging with us, because we've managed to demonstrate some of the successes of these techniques.
I want to squeeze in one last person. Nina, I'm going to give you a minute. Good morning. Good to talk to you again. How are you?
Okay, thanks. Thank you so much for giving me time. You know, Tabisa, what I'd like to say is really, I like what your guest was saying about offering alternatives. And I don't think one should, I think that's where one should start, with saying, how do you upend the education system immediately tomorrow? Because for a lot of kids, the education they're getting is nonsense. It's useless. And if you introduced all the kinds of things that your guest was talking about, the beauty industry, the carpentry industry, etc., then it really becomes an exciting place to be. And I'm just really encouraging and suggesting this is a time when one can do radical things, that it shouldn't be a slow-paced thing while the kids actually pull out. Thank you so much.
That's Nina there in Craig also. Mel, as we round off, your report, Zero Dropout Campaign, how do we access it, and how, to what extent are you engaging us as parents and communities, because you need our participation as well?
Absolutely. And so thank you very much, Tabitha, for this platform, because we've been working very hard last year to get more platforms like this so we can speak to the broader South Africa. Please access our resources. There are resources for parents as well as for children. We also have a WhatsApp platform that you can log on to, and all the details are on our website at www.zerodropout.co.za.
Very simple, www.zerodropout.co.za. Thank you so much, ma'am, for talking to us. We really, really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Thank you so much. There you go. Mel Mansfield there, program manager for the Zero Dropout campaign.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.